Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am, appropriately enough, your host, Michael Cutler. It's great to join you at the end of the week, and it's June the 10th. Goodness gracious, 2016, the clock is flying, the time is going by, the madness around this country continues, especially with this wacky administration. And with the damage being done to America. It just blows my mind where we are. And so that's what this program is about, to provide you with the information not being provided in the mainstream or perhaps lamestream media. And for those who might be inclined to think of immigration as a single issue, the reality is quite different. Immigration is a singular issue because it impacts virtually every challenge and threat that America and Americans face in this turbulent era. And this is not about lambasting immigrants. It's not about scapegoating anybody. It's about talking honestly, which is a difficult thing with all the political lunacy going on, talking honestly about the real nature of our borders, our immigration laws. It's an issue that I've been discussing for many years, ever since the attacks of 9/11. Living through those attacks here in New York, having testified before Congress 4.5 years earlier on how immigration fraud and visa fraud left us vulnerable to terrorism. You would never think that we had any inkling about what was happening back then, and certainly now you would never even believe there was a 9/11 Commission report. When was the last time you heard a member of Congress? When was the last time you heard a supposed journalist say, hey, wait a minute, if you look at what the 9/11 Commission had to say, what we're doing now with immigration goes exactly opposite what was suggested, beyond suggested, demanded. You know, when an airplane, forgive me, I have a little frog in my throat today. I've been doing a lot of talking, probably too much talking, trying to get the word out. Understand what we're dealing with. When an airplane crashes, the FAA, the NTSB come out and they say, well, this is why the plane came down. There was pilot error. There was a mechanical issue. The control tower screwed up, whatever. And they issue notices that have got to be adhered to. You will change the maintenance on those airplanes. You will make structural changes in the wing. Pilots will do this procedure differently, and air traffic controllers will change the way they do business, and they do it so that we don't wind up with another smoking hole in the ground with the remains of an airplane in the middle of the hole. Common sense. When two space shuttles were lost to accidents, commissions were convened so that we wouldn't lose another space shuttle. Again, what was the reason? Learn from the mistakes. My dad, may he rest in peace, used to say to me that there were no mistakes in life, only lessons, provided that we learn from what goes wrong and then act accordingly, modify what we do accordingly. So you would think that with the terror attacks in Europe, you would think with what recently happened in San Bernardino, and before that the Boston bombing, and before that all the other terrorists who've been arrested in the United States, who were trying to carry out deadly terrorist attacks, that our government would see in those failures lessons. But we don't learn the lesson because our politicians are being paid off to turn a blind eye and people are dying. This is not victimless crime. This is not some minor issue. This is not a minor issue. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Steve King quoted me at a hearing where they were talking about how there are at least 350,000 criminal aliens at large around America. And let's redefine what we mean by a criminal alien, because we always hear this nonsense from the open borders anarchists. Oh, you're talking about people who violate the immigration law. That's like a speeding ticket. No, it's not. And by the way, that mistaken notion was the result of some Border Patrol agent boss, somebody high up in the pecking order, who, when asked by members of Congress how serious a matter is it to run the border, responded by saying, not a big deal. The guy became a member of Congress. So he obviously had a goal here. And so his response was taken verbatim by all these members who were too damn lazy to look in the law book. Because if they had looked in the law book, they would have seen that, yes, the first time an alien runs the border, it's not a felony, but the second time it is. And if the person was deported, it's a 2-year felony if they come back illegally. And if they have criminal convictions, they face a maximum of 20 years in a federal jail just for running the border illegally as a prior deportee with a felony record. I'm very familiar with that law. I'm very proud of it because I had worked with Al D'Amato and a bunch of my colleagues to get that law created. And I have to give proper credit to Walter Connery. Walt was the chief of investigations in New York. He had previously been the head of internal affairs for immigration. And before that, he was a deputy inspector with the NYPD, where he headed up internal affairs for our police department. And he was an attorney. And without my knowing of his actions, and he didn't know my actions, he presented Al D'Amato, who was our senator back in the early 80s, with a legislative initiative to change the reentry law, because it used to be that we didn't make that distinction. If you were deported, came back, you were an illegal alien, it was a 2-year jail sentence, it didn't matter if you had 48 convictions. And we thought independently of each other. Interestingly, I joked with him afterwards and said, great minds think alike, or perhaps he said it to me. He had become a mentor to me, and it was tough losing him about a year ago. I miss Walter tremendously. He was really a mentor to me. But we both were on the same page that we needed to make reentry by criminals a 20-year felony crime. So you heard all this business from O'Reilly, Kate's Law. Well, components of Kate's Law are very important and maybe separate from this, but as far as the penalty of going to jail for a lengthy period, if you are a criminal alien, get deported and come back, that law was on the books. In 2010, 30% of all federal criminal prosecutions were for violation of that law. Pardon me. But yet you have members of Congress who are absolutely clueless as to the severity of the crime of somebody who comes into the country illegally. So we're going to talk about it tonight. But before we get to that, my motor is running, if you haven't figured it out. I want to remind you about some terrific websites I very much want you to go visit. These are websites that I'm directly involved with. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. For quite a few years now, I've been affiliated with and write for a terrific organization located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization. It's a mouthful, but their website is easy to remember. It's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. They have been doing a phenomenal job of getting the message out there day in, day out. They do the heavy lifting. Every day there are new articles on their website. So if you check it out today, don't think, well, I've seen it. Go back tomorrow. Go back the next day. They've been hammering at the environmental components of the immigration crisis. They've been hammering away at the economics of it, how Americans are losing their jobs, how middle-class workers are losing their careers, losing their income through no fault of their own, going from being middle-class, tax-paying consumers to people living below the poverty line. They've been hammering away at Kate Steinle's case and other cases involving criminal aliens who have been preying on innocent victims here in the United States. They have been hammering issue after issue after issue. And so I'm very happy to be a senior fellow for CAPS. I write for them. In fact, my most recent article was not actually totally about immigration. I kind of went off on a tangent. And a couple of, about a week ago, they published my article, Dangerous Safe Spaces on College Campuses Are Un-American. The idea, I mean, think about it, that college campuses, which used to be the venue for so many debates, my degree was in communications, arts, and sciences. Had I not become a federal agent, I had given some very serious thought to either becoming a journalist or speech instructor on the college level and coaching the debating team. I've been debating since high school, since I was 14 years old. Debate is a critical activity. It's the place where you learn to ask the questions. It's the place where you learn to stand on your feet and think on your feet. And it's the place where you learn to think critically. Boy, oh boy, how much of that is missing today? And in a debate, what you really have is an intellectual open marketplace. People bring opposing viewpoints. People in the audience can listen to the arguments and decide for themselves, hopefully, what makes more sense. Who has the better idea? Who has the worse idea? Who's addressing the issue? Think about how important that is. It's as American as apple pie. Freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, First Amendment. Well, there's two more components people rarely talk about. The right to petition the government for grievance when you have grievances, and boy, do we have a list. And the right for peaceable assemblage. Well, why do they want peaceable assemblage? So we could have the debates, we could have the discussions, if need be, the arguments. They just said, but keep it peaceful, keep it peaceable. No guns, no knives, no clubs, don't throw rocks at each other. But you can't throw words at each other, and words are powerful. Words definitely are powerful. There was a great film I'd love for you to go watch, Denzel Washington starred in it, called The Great Debaters, where he acted as the coach who taught James Farmer, who ultimately became the leader of the Congress of Racial Equality, C-O-R-E, CORE. And when he instructed Farmer, their characters, that is to say, in this wonderful film, he said, debate is blood sport. I had a wonderful coach back at Brooklyn College who said debate was non-physical combat. Same idea. Today, on college campuses, debate is being shut down. They are turning out the lights. And basically, they're taking the flag. Because when you can no longer stand on a college campus and provide alternate viewpoints, alternate perspectives and arguments, you're not living in a free country. And people say, oh, those liberals. Well, you know, folks, I'm registered as a Democrat. Pardon me. Boy, I can't shake this frog. I feel terrible. Sorry to irritate you with my throat irritation. You know, they attribute this to the liberals. Well, you know, on many issues, I'm liberal. And as Americans, it doesn't make us enemies. I don't know how far we have gone where Americans look at with each other with distrust when we disagree. Disagreement, going back to the First Amendment, is as American as apple pie. We need to be fact-based. We need to be respectful of one another. But that's how a democracy functions. And we do live in a democratic republic so far. So far. And I fear for it. I fear for its future and our future. Because when you can no longer express a different viewpoint, you're in trouble. But you see, to me, the idea of being a liberal means that you're willing to listen to other viewpoints and consider them, maybe reject them, but open-mindedly. That's the liberal mindset that I was taught as a child growing up in New York City a long time ago. That's what it is to be a liberal, to embrace all arguments and then decide for yourself what makes sense. That's me. This is not liberal. What we are witnessing is totalitarian. It is fascism. It's my way or the highway. It's the Model T Ford. You can have it in any color as long as it's black. How does that square with the First Amendment? Don't you dare come on this campus and speak a different viewpoint? What this does is to monopolize the conversation. So all that the students get to hear is one perspective. How dangerous is that? How dangerous is that? You're only going to hear one perspective. Now, what that means is the other side doesn't have to provide anything that's worthwhile because they have a monopoly. In economics, that's a problem, and in intellectual pursuit, it's a problem. When you only get to hear one side of the argument, you're no longer living in a democratic country. And we are only getting one side of the argument. And it started out with the tactics of intimidation and insult, the name-calling. Then it started with the altering of terminology. We're not going to call aliens anymore, God forbid, because there's clarity in that definition, then we're going to obfuscate the issue. We're going to make the debate about the word. So instead of having a discussion about immigration, you use the word alien, they jump up, wait a minute, you can't use that word. And now instead of having the conversation about if it makes sense to not have borders at a time when terrorists and criminals and drugs are coming across the border, you're having a dumb argument about the word alien. It's a way of distracting the conversation. And then if you were to say foreigner, they'd say, we don't like that word either. Why? Because they don't want you to talk about the issue. So we're going to keep on arguing how many angels can dance on the head of a pin even as the Titanic is sinking. That's the strategy. They vilify people who disagree. You're anti-immigrant. You're a nativist. You hate foreigners. You're xenophobic. You're xenophobic, yes. I belong to one of America's smallest minorities. I'm Jewish. My family, many of them were killed during the Holocaust. I was named for my mother's mother, who was killed in Poland during the Holocaust. But yet, we're the nativists. First-generation American nativists. Wow. You see, this is what it's about. It's about keeping the opponent from saying anything, because then they don't have to defend their position. Instead of a debate about the wisdom to not securing borders, the wisdom to leaving our doors wide open at night when we know there are burglars and home invaders roaming the neighborhood, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what color the porch light is. We're going to talk about what paint is on the wall of your house. And we're going to ignore the conversation about you leaving the doors open at night. That's what this does. And what it also does is to get people conditioned to not hear a debate, not hear a discussion, not hear disagreement. Everything is fine. We're all going to groupthink. We're all going to lockstep march to the beat of one particular drum, and they're going to tell you what drum to march to. That's communism. That's fascism. That's totalitarianism. It's not about being liberal. And then we hear, well, that's the progressives. I don't even like the word progressive. It confuses too many darn people. You know, I remember when I was a kid, General Electric used to have a wonderful slogan. It said, a GE Progress is our most important product. So we have this debate about progressives, and people say, well, you don't want to look forward. You don't want to go forward. You don't look for progress. So let's get rid of the words. Let us control the conversation. What we are dealing with are anti-American totalitarians and fascists and communists. We're not going to have open debates. We're not going to have open discussions. We're going to have Big Brother, the administrators on campus, whoever, dictate to us the way it is. And we're going to get you used to accepting the way things are, because we're going to impose rule on you and you're going to go along with it. And it's happening across our society. We go to the airport. I'm convinced that it wouldn't take much to get people to strip bare ass naked to go on an airplane. I mean, think of what we do now. We walk in like little robots. Off come the shoes, off come the jackets, the computers come out of our bags, we put our stuff in the bins. I've got this routine down to a science, pardon me, because I do a lot of traveling. But if you watch the people, nobody questions it. Nobody questions it. We've become conditioned. You're told what to do. Keep your mouth shut. Do what you're told. Keep your mouth shut. Don't say a word. That's the conditioning. We're hearing it on college campuses. Don't you dare open your mouth and tell me something that disagrees with me. And sooner or later, people start to think, well, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's just business as usual. Another day in the United States. You know, it started out when we were told that the bullies were a bad thing. And I got to tell you what, I used to get my ass kicked every other week. I liked science. I didn't like sports. You could imagine. I was scrawny. And I had fistfights every other week. I came home with torn clothing and a loose tooth and a black eye and a bloody nose. So I hated bullies. But my parents' solution to my being bullied was to have me go to a gym and work out, build up some muscle, do boxing on the weekends. And they said, you know, you're going to learn to defend yourself. And suddenly I started eating like an animal. I stopped being scrawny. I put on 20 or 30 pounds of muscle within a six-month period. And then when one kid started to push me around and I fought back and knocked him on his face, that shocked everybody. By the third time this happened, the other side, the bullies decided this wasn't fun anymore. And I remember the first time I fought back, this kid threw a punch at me first day of school. And we got both pulled into the principal's office, and the principal said, okay, who threw the first punch? That's all that mattered. Who started it? And because I didn't start it, I was just defending myself. What a novel idea. The principal said, good for you, Mr. Cutler. I'm glad to see you standing up for yourself, finally. It's good to be a man, finally. He gave me a note and said, get the class. The other kid had to have his mother and father show up because he started the fight. Today, oh, don't you dare stand up for yourself. If you stand up for yourself, the police are going to come. People in the school will fight your battles. Is that the way the world works? And you know, when Donald Trump says we don't win anymore, why don't we win? Why don't we win? Because boys and girls are being told, don't defend yourself. Be passive. Let someone else fight the battle for you. You just sit there and apologize for getting in the way of someone's fist. So understand what's slowly happening over time. We're being conditioned to not defend ourselves even when we're assaulted, right? We're told what words are acceptable, what words are not acceptable. We're told what arguments are acceptable and what arguments are not acceptable. We're told not to contradict the powers that be on the universities. Be subservient. Be subservient. Be an intellectual slave to the masters, the college bureaucrats. What happened to independent thinking? What happened to somebody with a new idea? Now, this is a very dangerous path we're going down. And no one is standing up. And look at the reaction. People are now being pushed around by their own government. They complain about it quietly in private, but they wouldn't dare do that out on the street. Why? See, this is not how a democracy functions. This is not American. And maybe because I'm a little bit older and I remember America when it was America, I see things very differently. I see a very dangerous pattern. Don't defend yourself. And I'm not saying go out there and beat the crap out of everybody, and certainly not with weapons, but goodness, someone throws a punch at you, why wouldn't you fight back? Why wouldn't you stand up for yourself? Why would you allow someone to push you around? But our kids are being taught to be subservient, and when someone starts, go get help. When I was a kid, if you had to go get help when someone threw a punch at you, I don't even want to tell you what the language would have been. If you want to talk about being politically incorrect, oh my goodness gracious. But today, we're going to be passive. We're going to be subservient. We're going to allow everything to happen. And then you're listening to this hearing. And at this hearing, and by the way, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. So in addition to capsweb.org, if you go to Front Page Magazine, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine that was just published a couple of days ago. And the whole point to the article the title of it was Obama's Victims, Released Criminal Illegals Commit Rape, Murder, Molestation, and the subtitle, The Astronomical Reoffense Rate of the Predators the President Set Loose in Our Communities. And that article that was the predication for this was published by the Boston Globe because a reporter there decided to file a Freedom of Information Act request for information about criminals turned loose in Boston. And it took 5 years. 5 years. And finally, it turned out that the information that they were received, that they were given, was only a fraction of the true number of criminals. How did they know? Because there was an oversight hearing about criminal aliens just about a week ago. And it was, it wasn't a week ago, it was April the 28th, 2016. And the House Committee on Investigations and Oversight conducted a hearing, criminal aliens released by the Department of Homeland Security. I called the Department of Homeland Surrender. And the statistics were staggering. And here's how the Boston Globe reported on it. Here's a little, pardon me, a little snippet. Some members of Congress appear to be losing patience with ICE's argument that it is powerless to stop these releases. Critics say that ICE should seek civil commitment for mentally ill immigrants who commit crimes, arrest reoffenders, and ask the Department of State to use diplomatic means to punish nations such as Haiti, China, and Jamaica when they refuse to take back their own citizens. At the House Oversight hearing on April 28th, Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz, a Utah Republican, said ICE's decision to release criminals who can't be deported are leading to thousands of preventable crimes, according to ICE's own statistics. The recent reoffenses include more than 130 murders or attempted murders since 2010, according to a letter ICE provided in February to Senator Chuck Grassley, an Iowa Republican who is chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Think about that. 130-plus people are now dead or were almost killed because the administration had criminals in custody and then turned them loose. What in the world is this about? There was a hearing a week earlier by the House Immigration Subcommittee, chaired by Trey Gowdy, that had even larger numbers, so it's even hard to know what the true magnitude of this disaster is. But people are dying. And Steve King, at that earlier hearing, quoted me because he had asked me years earlier when I testified if I knew how many people were killed every year by criminal aliens. And I said to him, Congressman, I don't know that number, but I can assure you that it would be a multiple of the number of people who died on 9/11. And at the hearing that was just held, he noted that because of what I said, he commissioned not one but two GAO reports, government accountability reports, and they found that I was right. In fact, I remember Steve King at one point at a news conference saying that it was believed that at least 7,000 people are killed every year by people who should not even be in the United States. 7,000. 7,000. If a handful of people are killed because a car has unintended acceleration, everybody goes crazy. And we should. Every life is precious. You know, we were talking about communists. Joseph Stalin, the tyrant, had said very sagely, he was an evil, evil guy, but he wasn't stupid. And he remarked that one death is a tragedy while millions of deaths are a statistic. Each and every time someone is killed, it's a discrete crime. That's how you need to look at mass murder. So, you know, 7,000 people dead per year, car accidents, shootings, stabbings, muggings, 7,000 dead. And Hillary Clinton says, oh, the Obama administration's too tough on immigration. She's promising an amnesty within weeks of being sworn in as president, God forbid. How in the world does that square with common sense? You're going to take millions of people with no way of knowing when they got here, no way of knowing who they are, no way of conducting interviews, no way of conducting field investigations, and give them lawful status so that the next day they could file petitions to bring in all of their spouses and all of their minor children. And instead of 11 million, let's say it turns into 30 million, and let's say only a third of them, 10 million, file for an average of four or five other aliens, their spouses and their kids. We're talking about how many people coming in? Another 50 million? We could almost double our population within a matter of a few years. And we're talking primarily about people from third world countries. Does America have a need for more students for our overcrowded and failing schools? Do our roads need more cars and more pollution? Do the cities suffering drought need millions of more people turning on the tap? The factories don't need these workers. Increasingly, we are mechanizing our factories. Increasingly, all the jobs that we do are being done by robots and mechanization. This isn't 100 years ago where there was a limitless appetite for cheap labor. You know, when you think of the old Model T Ford and all these burly guys wearing grease-spattered coveralls, moving the car from one station to the next on the assembly line, That's not the way it happens. Go watch these programs, how it's made. It's fascinating. The factories that produce the cars look as clean as what you'd expect to be manufacturing spacecraft, you know. The situations are immaculate. Robots do most of the welding, most of the metal bending, all the stuff that used to be done by hand is done by robots. So what in the world do we need to import all these new workers for? Meanwhile, we have 100 million Americans of working age not working. You know, we are watching America being hammered into the ground by our own political leaders from both political parties. And so they hold this hearing, and what is it, the hearing? They talk about the criminal aliens. And the Boston Globe was furious because the numbers they were given but were but a fraction of what was divulged at the hearing. And when they asked immigration for an explanation, and it took 5 years to get those lying numbers, oh, well, we didn't include this group, and we didn't include that group, and we only looked at your area, and the lies and the BS and the nonsense went on forever. And meanwhile, people are dying. Meanwhile, more drugs are pouring into the country. More people are getting hooked on narcotics. Now, I got another question. Why is it that they've had some very effective commercials on TV warning about the dangers of cigarette smoke, warning about the dangers of driving and texting, warning about the dangers of driving with no seatbelt, warning about the dangers of drunk driving, warning about taking prescription drugs inappropriately? How many commercials have you seen? How many public service announcements have you seen warning young people in particular about the dangers of taking heroin or cocaine or any of those drugs? You see, if you took the drug money out of the economy, out of Wall Street and the banks and real estate, they would take a huge hit. The cynic in me is convinced that the bankers and the stockbrokers and all those other people who are feeding at this trough of cheap labor and the laundering of money, proceeds of the crimes, are rolling in dough. They've never had more money. This is better than a printing press. They're making more money than Parker Brothers cranks out money for the Monopoly play games. We are being exploited into the ground, and we're being told you got to be compassionate. You got to be compassionate. We have to let all these people come in so that what? How well are they treated? Let me tell you, when I used to raid the factories before many of them moved out of the country, we had sweatshops that were truly sweatshops, where you walked into a garment factory during the summer and the steam presses were going full tilt, where the windows were open just a couple of inches, where fans encrusted with filth and dust and gook on these big, tall stanchions blew like crazy and the filth went everywhere. You wanted to put on a face mask. And the temperature and the humidity, it was like being in hell. Escape exits blocked, not unlike the conditions at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, where these people were being swindled out of their money. And even when they weren't being swindled, the amount they were earning was nothing. And you see, what we did there was not demonstrating compassion. It was exploitation. And what's really terrible about this, I want you to stop and think about it. It's been estimated, and I think it's a low number, that at least 10% of Mexico lives in the United States. I've heard much higher statistics also. The people who come here to work are generally young, able-bodied men. Okay, they're displacing Americans on construction sites and other manual jobs like that. These are the guys who should normally be storming the gates and demanding opportunities in their home country. Mexico has the 16th or 17th largest economy in the world. There's no reason for that oligarchy to control the vast majority of the wealth of Mexico. So what happens? The young people come here. They're being treated like slaves or worse than slaves. But by keeping them here and keeping them occupied, they're not back in Mexico demanding real reforms, demanding an opportunity to be successful in their own country. And what does that do to Mexican families? The young men come here. It leaves children without their fathers, women without their wives, kids grow up in broken homes. So they wind up joining gangs. They get involved with criminal activity. The family is essential to a stable life for a youngster. You see? So we're breaking up Mexican families, and we keep hearing, and not only Mexico, this is going on around the world. And we keep hearing about this family reunification. Well, why was the family split up in the first place? Because conditions were so abysmal that these people came here to make a living, send money home, which, by the way, is destroying our economy. We're losing hundreds of billions of dollars a year. See, nothing good comes of this. It drives down wages for Americans at home. It drives down wages for immigrants working legally in our country. It causes all this money to flow out of our economy. And it destroys working conditions, both here and overseas. This is exploitation, pure and simple. But you see, the other side, the liars, don't want to have the debate. Why don't they want to have the debate? Because they know that if I stand up there and say at a debate what I just said to you here on my program, they cannot mount an argument against me. They have no answer to what I just said. So what in the world are they going to do? How do we defeat Mike Cutler's argument or the arguments that other people would make that run parallel to what I just said to you? There's only one way. Don't give Mike Cutler an opportunity to be heard. Because if he can get his message out there, he's going to make people think. And if people are going to think, they're going to realize they're being conned. This is a con job, folks. We're being swindled. We're being swindled out of our jobs. We're being swindled out of our share of the American dream. And all too many of us are being swindled out of our lives. On 9/11, that terrorist attack was a glaring bit of evidence of a massive failure of the immigration system. Every one of those terrorists entered the United States through a port of entry. They lied to get their visas. They lied to the inspectors at the airport. They got multiple false identities. They got all sorts of stuff. Some of them actually got immigration benefits. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, became a United States citizen having engaged in a marriage fraud, and the guy was a terrorist. Time and again, what are we seeing? Immigration system fails, and what are the consequences? Terror attacks, people being murdered, drugs being sold on our streets. You can't argue against the facts. They're there. John Adams was right. Facts are stubborn things. So if you're pushing an indefensible position, the only strategy that you have left is if people stop being intimidated and people are pushing back and they're saying, no, you're not going to get away with this foolishness. So what is the last resort? Shut down debate. If there's no debate, Mike Cutler doesn't get to stand in front of the cameras or that college classroom and talk about the real world of immigration, how this is about exploitation, how this is harmful not only to Americans, but to people around the world. And what do you think this does to America's standing around the world? Just because people are poor and not well educated doesn't mean they're fools. They know they're being exploited, but they feel helpless. They feel hopeless, and they resent us. And they figure it's all Americans that are doing this. It's not all Americans, because we're in a bad spot also. And the people putting us in that spot are the people that we, the people, elected. They are betraying us. They're betraying the Constitution. They're betraying their oaths of office. And increasingly, if you look at TV, here's a way to figure out what they're doing. And I've said it before, but I want you to think about it. And I want you to talk to your friends and neighbors about this. When there's a story on about an airplane crash, they bring in pilots, they bring in investigators, they bring in meteorologists, they bring in every expert under the sun. When there's a story about cancer research, they bring in oncologists and biochemists. They bring in pathologists, they bring in geneticists, you name it, TV gets the best of the best. They're all there lined up waiting in the green room for their shot at 3 minutes in front of the camera to to explain their arcane area of expertise. When there's a murder, they bring in retired homicide detectives, don't they? When there's military action, they bring in former generals and admirals and commandos and helicopter pilots, right? Navy SEALs. These are the practitioners. But when they talk about immigration, suddenly you don't see immigration agents anymore. I used to do a lot of TV. I don't care if they don't want me on. I've had my opportunity to be in front of the cameras. It gets old. Bring on somebody young. Except the young kids don't know about immigration because they're kept from doing their job much as they want to. But who do they bring in? They'll bring in a border sheriff. Now, why do they bring in a border sheriff? What does that sheriff know about the Immigration and Nationality Act? Not much. They may as well ask an immigration agent about giving out parking tickets or speeding tickets or whatever. Right? So they bring in a sheriff. And he says, well, I see them running across the border and they're committing crimes. Yeah, that's okay. It's part of the story. It's only a tiny part of the story. But you see, it reinforces this notion that the action is along the Mexican border. Is there action there? Sure there is. I know somebody's probably out there right now thinking, oh, my God, Cutler isn't going to say that we're not supposed to secure the border. Okay, let's secure the border. Everybody's happy now? If you think that's all we need to do, you're nuts. If you were sitting in a rowboat right now and you looked down because you noticed that you've got water up to your ankles and you saw there were five holes in the bottom of your boat, you want to start by plugging one of the holes, or are you going to do everything you can to plug all the holes before the damn boat winds up at the bottom of the lake? You know how many times I've gone and done speaking engagements around the country? And by the way, if you become aware of opportunities for such an engagement, let me know, because I've been clear across this country trying to wake people up. But they'll say to me, oh, Mr. Cutler, shouldn't we at least start by securing the Mexican border? No, absolutely not. Don't start with that. It's a component that needs to be done at the same time we do everything else. You don't say, well, I'm going to drive my car, and first I'm going to work the gas pedal, and then after a half hour, I'll work the steering wheel, and later on, maybe I'll hit the brakes. No, it's a coordinated operation. Everything's got to happen simultaneously. I remember one day I was having a wonderful conversation with retired General Paul Vallely, retired Major General, U.S. Army. And we were talking about immigration and enforcement of the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. And that's really the critical issue. That's what no one ever talks about, interior enforcement. And it's not just E-Verify. That's another subterfuge. That's another scam. Again, do we need mandatory E-Verify? Of course we do. But if there's no agents to conduct the audits and conduct the investigations and make the arrests, it doesn't matter whether or not people are using E-Verify. You see, if you file a tax return, but there were no IRS agents to go after you, it wouldn't matter if you committed fraud, because you need the agents to put the evidence together to bring the case to court. Without the guy with the badge, the gun, and the handcuffs, the laws don't matter. They don't enforce themselves. So the usual scam, we need mandatory E-Verify, we need drones on the border, which, by the way, have made no arrests according to studies done by the GAO. The drones are worthless. They cost millions of dollars. For the price of one drone, you could have four helicopters with armed agents on board. Then why do we have drones? Good question. And that's something I wrote about for the social contract, the art of the question, the immigration questions we need to ask. You have drones to waste the money. Oh, there's so much waste in government. It's waste by design. Don't you understand? It's so that the politicians can go home and tell the low-information constituent, I just voted to spend $3 billion on drones and electronic this and electronic that, and they give it a fancy name, like they used to have the Secure Border Initiative Network, SBI Net, the virtual fence. Stopped nobody. Of course, billions, but it stopped nobody. What was the idea? So they could brag about this thing they voted for. But at the end of the day, it did nothing to stop the flow of people across the borders, because that's what the United States Chamber of Commerce wanted. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the biggest enemy to the working American in this country right now. There is nobody who hates the working American more than the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We are in their crosshairs because every time you get a paycheck, they see purple. Because they know if they brought someone in from another country, they could slash that paycheck and they wouldn't have to pay a 401k and they can get away with all kinds of chicanery. It's about cutting the cost of labor to the bone. And if they could put 12-year-old kids in factories, by God, they would do it. They would do it. Because they are all about maximizing profit at the destruction of our country and the destruction of the middle class. Look at the statistics. Look at the statistics. The median family income has declined by a few dollars in the last 5 years. That means it's declined by a lot more than a few dollars because the costs have not stayed constant, if I can get the words out. It's not static. Everything is getting more and more expensive. You're running up a down escalator, but yet the amount of money you're taking home is shrinking. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is ecstatic, but they're not happy yet because they know they could make it even worse. They know they could kill the middle class. Ignorant. They are blind with greed. This is what they and their greedy friends don't realize is if you kill the middle class, you're killing the consumer base. Nobody has the money to buy the garbage that they're manufacturing. That's why if you look at the car ads, almost always, what do they tell you in those car commercials? How much you can lease the car for. And then you see in the small print, low mileage lease. Yes, you can drive 8 miles a month. And then it's only going to cost you $212 to rent this tin can with doors and wheels. They don't tell you that if you want a nicer car and you want to drive 1,000 miles a month, it's going to cost you, you know, an extra $300 a month. No, they give you the optimal numbers, and there's 800 little disclaimers. Because people, for the most part, can't buy cars, can't buy anything. Not until people accept belly button lint as an alternative for cash. So in order to bring in all the cheap labor, in order to bring in everybody that they want to bring in for Silicon Valley and fire the Americans, does anyone ever think about this? If there's a shortage of high-tech Americans, why are they firing Americans? Usually when there's a shortage, employers put up with some pretty wacky employees because they see, you know, Charlie's nuts, you know, he's obnoxious, he's a loudmouth, he tells terrible jokes, but he knows how to do his job, and if we get rid of him, there's just nobody that can do the job like old Charlie. So they put up with Charlie's nonsense. Why? There's a shortage of workers in that field. We're told we don't have enough engineers, we don't have enough scientists, we don't have enough programmers. And over the past couple of years, think about it, they have been firing Americans like it's going out of style. And who are they bringing in? People from India. And how do we know how successful they've been at this? Because last year, India's economy got an infusion of $70 billion, with a B, $70 billion, not just from America, other countries too, but India leads the charge in getting money wired home by their workers around the world. And their economy took off. Our economy is being looted, so we're in the tank. This is part of the trade deals that we're hearing about. And what does Hillary tell us? We're going to do more of this. We're going to do more of this if Hillary gets her way. There will be no middle class in America. And John Kerry was out there, and I spoke about this, and I've written about it when he delivered the commencement address at Northeastern University. And what did John Kerry talk about? He said, don't look inward. Don't hide behind fences. We shouldn't do it, and we can't do it. Look at China. Their middle class has grown by millions. Look at India. Their middle class has grown by millions. But don't look inward. Why not? Because what are you going to see inward? Wages declining, drug addiction increasing, infrastructure crumbling. Don't look inward. We now have a 500,000, roughly, foreign students studying the science, technology, engineering, and math curriculum, the STEM curriculum. You know what country leads the charge? China. And you really have to wonder if Hillary and her involvement with China is part of the reason why this is happening. But before we just look at Hillary, look at George W. Bush, the guy that wasn't happy with Donald Trump. I'm sorry, George Bush Sr. He was the ambassador to China. So all roads don't lead to Rome today. They seem to lead to China. And China sends us more high-tech students than anybody else. And it's China that's hacking our computers multiple times per second every single day. And there was an article in Popular Science just a couple days ago about a new guided missile cruiser that China put to sea. Highly sophisticated, capable of shooting down airplanes, capable of taking out submarines, and they're building fleets of these vessels. I'd like a dollar for every engineer working on this program in China who was educated in the United States of America. And John Kerry would probably read the article and see the words guided missile cruiser and say, oh, wow, China's building cruise ships. No, John, guided missile cruisers aren't cruise ships, you see. But this is John Kerry, and this is this administration. Understand the way that we have become our own worst enemy. And it's not just the Mexican border. Because if we actually had agents doing interior enforcement, we could pick up those criminal aliens. There was no reason for them to be released. The head of ICE, Saldana, testified before the Senate a few months ago that they had taken $113 million that had been appropriated by Congress to deport criminal aliens, and they diverted the money to other programs. Who gave them that right? She said, well, we couldn't find any aliens worth deporting. You can't find aliens worth deporting? I almost fell over when I saw the video. This stuff is verifiable, what I am telling you. Why aren't you seeing it on the evening news? Do you think it's an oversight? Why are they showing you the story of the kitten that got stuck in the storm drain, but not telling you about Saldana returning $113 million, or if not returning it, diverting it? Because we are being given the mushroom treatment. We're being kept in the dark and being fed a lot of manure, a lot of fertilizer. That's what's going on in the news media. That's what's going on with the politicians. The lies, the nonsense, we can't deport them all, okay? Deport as many as you can. I can't get all the water out of my basement. Well, then don't even bother with a sump pump. Let's just let the water sit there and maybe we'll have an in-ground swimming pool. The arguments are crazy. They don't do it with drunk driving. They don't do it with people who cheat on their taxes. They don't do it with people who text and drive. And I can assure you that bad as things are with illegal immigration, we have more people texting and driving than there are illegal aliens in the United States. What do? Police departments around the country issue public service announcements. They say, we're looking for you. You pick up the phone, a SWAT team is going to descend on your car. We're going to yank you out of the car. We're going to take your car, your wallet, your license, and your freedom. Don't even think of it. Oh, and we will certainly take your phone. Right? Drunk driving, same deal. All these other crimes, same deal. But when we hear about immigration, oh, we can't deport them all. This is too difficult. Why? Because those politicians who tell you that want what's happening to happen because they are taking the bribe of a campaign contribution from somebody who has a vested interest in maintaining the status quo and in slamming American workers into the ground. We've got to start to stand up for ourselves. Our government has become that schoolyard bully. They get away with it because they know they can get away with it. They get away with it because no one is pushing back. They get away with it because the truth is being hidden from the American people and precious few people are willing to dig and do a little bit of independent thinking. That's why I have this program. That's why I've been out there. My dad was a construction worker. He will always be my biggest hero. I literally carried him off his job his last day of work. He was dying of lung cancer at age 57 in large measure because he had worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War because his brother was already in the Army Air Corps, and then it became the U.S. Air Force. And because of the Sullivan brothers, there had been a ruling that they would not take the sole surviving male member of a family in case something happened to him, the family would lose their last man to carry the family name. That was because the Sullivan brothers, five brothers killed on one ship. My dad tried several times to enlist, and they wouldn't take him. So he worked in the shipyards and was exposed to asbestos. And I remember what it was like when he came home after he was laid off from a construction job. You know, construction workers are in a bind. If they don't work quickly, they get fired, so they work as quickly as they can, and as soon as the building is completed, they're out of a job anyway, so now they got to go look for a new job. And between jobs, talk about a lean streak. We were eating tuna fish and cheese and noodles, and it wasn't fun. And I know that that scenario is playing out for God knows how many millions of American families across the country right now. I relate to that situation all too well. We need to push back. We need, as Americans, to make certain that our government finally, for once and for all, represents us, our children, and our grandchildren. And when people call you a bigot, so what? That's like the kid in the schoolyard calling you a chicken. Would you jump off the roof because someone said you're a chicken? Are you going to back down and walk away and tell somebody that you're sorry if you offended them? No, you're going to tell the guy he's a liar and he should know better. That's all you got to do. And if enough of us did that frequently enough, that nonsense would stop. Just like the kid that punches the bully in the nose generally has nothing more to fear because everyone knows this is the wrong kid to mess with. Americans have got to prove to the Congress that we are the wrong people to mess with. It's an old notion, the good old days, when Americans stood up for themselves and it wasn't considered a hero to stand up for yourself. You're a hero when you stand up for someone else. When you stand up for yourself, you're showing common sense. You're showing that you're a man or a woman, that you're an adult. We need more adults in America, folks. The arguments the other side is using aren't good arguments. That's why they're trying to shut down the debate. We need to resist these efforts to shut us down and to take from us our birthright as American citizens. And what's our birthright? The American dream. And if you want to talk about racism, look at the damage being done to America's minorities and their children. They are suffering the worst crime, the worst poverty, and the worst levels of drug addiction. That's why you saw those riots in those tough neighborhoods. These are children who have no sense of hope. In America, no sense of hope? That's not the way it's supposed to be. As Americans, we should be looking to see what unites us, not what divides us. We should be divided against any politician who would deprive us of our freedoms, deprive us of our dreams. That's what Americans are supposed to do. It's the job that all Americans must do. Remember, suicide is not an act of compassion. And also, please remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. I thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm glad that you were here with me. If you like the program, please tell your friends and your neighbors about my show. Please go to capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, and The Social Contract. And I look forward to seeing you again next week right here, once again, on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.